Hello.
Hello.
This is Alex DeBoer.
And Amanda Ha.
And we are here on Lil Lady Radio Collective to talk about mental health.
Woo-hoo.
Woo! And what you just heard was Supermoon from their new album Playland. That was a track called Stories We Tell Ourselves About Ourselves. So I think relevant.
Yeah.
Right?
Very good song.
So today we are mostly going to be chatting about vulnerability and the role of vulnerability or as a theme in mental health. I think one of the things we had planned first was to chat a bit about how vulnerability can often be a gendered quality that people are socialized to either have a lot of or not have at all. One thing I've definitely noticed is that a lot of men struggle to be vulnerable and to connect with their emotions and to communicate with others. That's obviously a generalization, but often it is true. And a lot of women, on the other hand, struggle with perceiving themselves as being overly vulnerable in a society where vulnerability is often considered a flaw. And women are often labeled as irrational or crazy, as we all know. Mm-hmm. And so that's just a really interesting kind of idea to explore.
Yeah, I've listened to many podcasts and like many speakers about how vulnerability is actually just a neutral feeling.
Right.
But our society seems to think it's like a negative quality.
Yeah.
So feelings in general seem to be negative.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the Western world, it seems like that's the case.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. And so I think one of the experiences, at least I've had, is struggling to be someone who's vulnerable when others kind of resist being vulnerable and accepting my vulnerability. So I don't know. It's something that I think about a lot. And
I definitely do as well. I just recently, I cried in front of a friend.
Cool.
And I was having a very tough day, and I was emotionally exhausted, and I was sleeping in my living room for a week, and I just started, like, bawling my eyes out. And for some reason, in that moment, I didn't know where to go, and two of my good friends were around, and my one friend just, like, jumped over the bed and, like, held my hand.
Aww.
While I was, like, on the ground, and I realized how vulnerable that was for me, just being in front of others. I never cry in front of people. Like,
right.
That's not something I do.
Yeah.
And so it really just opened up like the vulnerability train, and I was able to realize that it's okay if people see your emotions.
Like, mm-hmm.
And definitely having that kind of support was very helpful.
Yeah, totally. So. Yeah. And it's interesting how people are often able to give support to those who are able to be vulnerable or sort of are vulnerable without maybe choosing to be. But maybe they themselves struggle to be open and to connect with their emotions. And, you know, I have people in my life, as I think everyone does, who I think maybe can't even kind of aren't even able to necessarily realize that they are experiencing certain emotions. And, but people who find that challenging can still be supportive. So I don't know, there's everyone's experience and the way they're socialized makes it more or less challenging for them to
definitely
know.
And I noticed sometimes those people that aren't able to be emotional themselves, like they'll be able to take in someone else's vulnerability, but when it's their own vulnerability, that's when it's too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so, and I believe that's like a gendered thing with men. Like they can
often
they're able to support, like in a gendered way, a woman.
Yeah, yeah.
If she's crying or upset, but if it was if they were in the same position and started crying, like it would be perceived by themselves or by someone else as weakness.
Yeah, totally.
And
so it's like an acceptance of vulnerability, but when certain people do it, who are like quote unquote allowed to do it under the way we've been socialized in Western society, like you said.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So our conversations about masculinity and vulnerability, I think, segue nicely into conversations about how masculinity can be harmful to men as well as women, and how a lot of that harm takes place in group situations. So we have on the line our friend Levi, who identifies as non-binary but was socialized as a... and he is kindly going to speak with us about his experiences related to these topics of masculinity. So just bear with me for a second while I connect the phone line. Okay. Levi, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Sweet. Yay. Yay. We successfully connected the phone to the soundboard.
Yeah.
Yay. Okay, cool. How are you, Levi?
Yeah, I'm good. I've never been on the radio before. Hi, Mom.
That's awesome. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, thanks so much. So did you want to begin?
Yeah.
How shall we begin?
So I'm going to bring up a few stories with you, Levi. One of them you know from me telling you about my life, so I'm just going to say this to everyone that's listening, that there's a trigger warning for sexual assault coming up, so if you'd like to not hear that, then this is the point to stop listening. Levi, I was just talking to you on the phone earlier about this other example. So I'm going to bring up this stuff, and then Alex is going to pose some questions to you about these anecdotes. Mm-hmm.
And we're not trying to put you on the spot or make you represent all people socialized as men. P.S. Levi, just so you know.
Yeah, I can't speak for all men, but I can certainly speak to sort of cultural norms.
Yes,
appreciate it.
Okay, so just to catch you up, we were just talking about masculinity. So I was just going to bring up a situation where masculinity was at full force for me. When I was 16, I was what I think sexually assaulted. I was very drunk, and I believe I was drugged. And the scenario that I was told by one of the men in the group was that I pulled down my pants and I started masturbating in front of all the men in the room. There was no other women. It was all guys. And so he told me this. And then also I was seen walking with them outside in the middle of wintertime with one shoe on and no jacket. Mm-hmm. And this is very curious to me because I was a late bloomer when it came to masturbation. So it didn't really meet up for me. But even if I think of this being the story and this is the truth, what I was thinking about is how none of the men in the group felt the need to say, oh my gosh, okay, like this girl needs to put her pants back on. I need to help her get her pants back on and send her in a cab home. And the one thought that came to mind is, oh, like this was masculinity at full force. Mm-hmm. Whereas if one man felt, he expressed this to all his friends, it's very possible that they would call him a pussy or think that like he was weak or not a real man for like being able to take in like this like show that was happening.
Like if he were to stop the group from humiliating you or offer you a coat or something.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so there's that example. And then for my other example, it's a story that I read or some kind of article. I don't know if it's a true story, but it's about a girl that had Down syndrome, and this boy put her into his parents' room and had all his his guy friends with him. They were quite young, and he said, okay, now everyone has to go into this room and have sex with this girl. So all the men go into the room, and there was one of them that like went into the room and he started crying, and he was like so upset by this situation, and so he didn't have sex with the girl. But when he went back out, he told the boys that he had sex with this girl. And that was like another example to me of like how masculinity can like really, like especially in a group situation, can be very vulnerable to like bring up a different opinion.
Yes. Yeah. And one that is not what men and boys are socialized to behave, one that's not that doesn't work within that narrative. So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's thank you for sharing that personal story. That's
mm-hmm. No problem.
Yeah, it's a I don't know, kind of upsetting, but yeah. So, to Levi, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, cool. Just checking. Yeah, like I guess our question to you is just from your own experience, have you been in a situation where you felt maybe unable to act on what's right in order to stay within this narrative of what is masculine?
You'd think so. And I'm sure that I have felt all kinds of... Well, it's interesting because you're talking about sort of like masculinity in regards to like this concept of peer pressure, right?
Yes.
There's a group
Absolutely.
Of boys and there's, you know, they're all sort of this, there's like this a mob mentality of like, this is the thing we're going to do. And it's like super badass and whatever they sort of think it is. And like in regards to like the young girl with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
And these boys, you know, going and obviously taking advantage of and assaulting like a very vulnerable girl.
Mm-hmm.
I guess like what comes to mind for me is that like, and I haven't really had a lot of opportunity to think about it, but it mm-hmm. feels less like a specific thing to masculinity and more of just sort of like youth and peer pressure and the sort of need that we have when we're young to fit in and be accepted by our peers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't grow up as a young girl, so I don't really know what happened. So I guess I can really only speak to sort of like the masculine side of this. And as far as like there being moments in my life where based on sort of my social, you know, programming, I didn't act in the right ways. Like, I mean, nothing that comes to mind in regard to like any sort of like social peer situation. But I think one thing that I've always been kind of nervous to talk about openly, and certainly this is like a very public forum,
mm-hmm.
Which is, and I think it's important to talk about, is like my experiences in regard to sexualized violence in my own intimate relationships.
Right.
So being like, and I can, I mean, I, is that something that you'd like to hear about?
Well, definitely. Feel free to, yeah, tell us.
All right, here I go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like as a young boy, I learned everything that I knew about sex from pornography.
Right, yeah.
As far as, like, sex ed was concerned, it didn't come until, you know, much later after I'd started masturbating and, like, exploring my sexuality and stuff like that. And so everything that I learned about, and even when I did take sex ed, it was, like, all I really learned was, like, if you don't want to get a girl pregnant, wear a condom.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to get an STD, then wear a condom. But generally speaking, don't have sex because it's bad and you'll die.
Yeah.
So, like, never a conversation around sexual consent or anything like that, because they basically didn't want to encourage youth to have sex.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So I learned everything that I know about sex from pornography, and the sort of normative narrative as far as, like, pornography is concerned is that, you know, the woman is there for the man's pleasure, and there's, again, no discussion around consent or mm-hmm. even, like, the woman's satisfaction or pleasure in it. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm, like sad to say that it's, like, and I feel like it's a very, like, common part of a lot of young people's experience that, like, the sex that I was having with intimate partners mm-hmm. In my adolescence was, like, involved manipulation, coercion, and a lot of guilt and a lot of pressure,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I was essentially in that doesn't regard consent, which is considered non-consensual sex, which is also known as rape and sexual assault. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can openly admit that like my first experiences in sexual encounters as an adolescent were like, just like predominantly rape.
Right.
And
when you say pressure, you felt a lot of pressure, you mean pressure from other men or on yourself to have sexual experiences?
There's part of that, but more so, like, it had more to do with the fact that, like, I was in this, like, relationship with my girlfriend, and as far right. as I was concerned, I would tell my girlfriend, you know, if she didn't want to have sex with me, I'd be like, well, like, this is what people do in relationships, like, you're supposed to have sex with me, and if you don't want to have sex with me, then I, like, basically don't want to be with you, so it's okay. almost like blackmail, right?
Yeah.
As far as I was concerned, if I'm not having sex in my relationship, then that definitely means something about me as like a young man.
Right.
And how if my girlfriend and I aren't having sex, then I am not. Yeah, like that I sort of lack a certain masculinity.
Right.
It's
also interesting, Amanda and I were talking about earlier how it seems often with men, when they believe something to be the case, there is this really intense confidence that stands behind that belief. Whereas with women, there is often a sort of almost eagerness or just willingness to concede and like question whether what they think should happen or what they think is right is right. So
Need to please.
Yeah, or they need to please or be accepted by other people, and particularly men. So
well, young female sexuality is just not something that's encouraged.
Yeah. And especially if you're learning from porn, from mainstream porn. Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for sharing that. That's super interesting. I also had a point that I wanted to bring up about the stories that Amanda told and then your response, because I think it is really apt that you pointed out that that seems to mostly be a case of peer pressure and like group mentality that seems almost as if it could be the same way if the genders were reversed. And so when you said that, I was like, yeah, that's true. But I think what is different about it and why it is a case of masculinity and sort of patriarchy and rape culture is like what the actual action was. Like, I think that with young girls, there is intense peer pressure, just like with young boys, and people have a need to want to fit into groups, especially when they're young. But I think the difference is that the way men exercise their identity, like how they come to define themselves through their actions, is often through sexuality and like rape culture and having this sort of like power over women, and in this case like sexual power over a woman. And so I think it's like the context of what the kids in this group are doing that is different and makes it a masculine situation. And I was just wondering what you thought of that.
No, that makes a lot of sense. There's no doubt that sort of like the effect of those problematic behaviors is like significantly different, considering the context of like the patriarchal society that we live in, the fact that like men and boys hold power over women.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had a little more time to think about it, you know, because I'm like,
totally.
This is kind of interesting. And in regard to what happened with Amanda, like, there's almost like, this like lack of respect there where it's like, oh man, this chick is like totally getting naked in front of us. This is awesome. And they're sort of, they're not looking at Amanda like she's a human being. Yeah. They're looking at her like she is an object.
Uh-huh.
That is there for their pleasure.
Totally.
And there's no regard of whether or not it's like, oh, is she so drunk that maybe she's going to regret doing this? And the fact that they're just sort of like carting her around outside, it's like, really, really, really problematic. And there's certainly, it's sort of like the gendered aspect of it, and the power dynamic there is really huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting. I had one other example to share with you, which is from, I was watching Democracy Now! The other day, which is like a news channel, and they had some coverage of the Democratic National Convention, which recently ended last weekend, I think. And there was this woman who's a nun, and I think she had 8 friends with her who are also nuns. And they were traveling on this bus throughout the United States, trying to connect with communities and get communities and individuals involved in politics and, you know, just get them out to vote. They made their way, saw a group of speakers, because there are obviously many speakers who speak at the convention. And this was a group of women who were, I think, all African-American women, or mostly African-American women, who had had their children killed at the hands of police or in related situations. So it was essentially on the topic of white privilege and Black Lives Matter. And the woman, the nun, who was reflecting on this experience, hearing them speak, was saying how, you know, while she really thought it was great that they were speaking and bringing up this issue, she didn't feel challenged being a white woman to find ways to let other groups of people have access to the privilege that she does as a white person. And while I don't think any individual group or any demographic of people has an obligation to tell other groups how to treat them, I don't think that's the case at all. But I do think that this notion of people who have privilege being challenged to check that privilege and to find ways to extend it to others, like, kind of constantly, is really interesting. And I think her story, while she's talking as a white woman, obviously also applies to white men, and even more so to white men. And I just thought it was interesting to think about, and to think about for white men, or as for you, in your case, someone who is socialized as a man and as someone who's white, like, just, I know you're a very, like, self-aware person and emotionally intelligent. Like, how are you reflexive about your privilege? Sorry if that's a lot. And again, I'm sorry, I'm not making you represent, like, all men, but, no, like, I feel like you probably are reflexive, and it's just interesting to see how people can be reflexive.
I like to think I'm reflexive, and I like to think that I know what that means.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yes, please.
Just like reflecting on your experience and how it might be more privileged than others. Or
did you say reflexive or reflective?
Reflexive, like reflecting on, to reflect on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I feel like I am a little bit, like, ignorant when it comes to, like, acknowledging and understanding my privilege in regard to race.
Okay.
But certainly I feel like I have a bit more of an understanding and ways in which to check and sort of share that privilege, if that's the term you want to use, with, sure, like, women or, like, sort of feminine identified people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think I have a hard time with it, you know, because, like, as a person who socializes as a man, like, I'm encouraged to take up a lot of space.
Yeah.
And to always have my opinion heard and to basically feel like I will always know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I think for me, acknowledging my privilege requires a certain level of, like, humility,
mm-hmm,
where I have to sort of, like, check my ego and be like, I don't necessarily have to be heard right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's another voice here that can speak to this a lot better than I can, or maybe that voice is underrepresented. How I do that practically in my everyday life, I don't know.
I guess just listening, right? But
yeah, and sorry. I also wonder, like, say for catcalling and such things like that, do you find it to be like a vulnerable thing to have to call? Like, have you ever called out a man about catcalling another woman? And does it feel vulnerable to you? Do you have to do that? Like, is it a difficult thing for you?
Well, I have kept mostly female friends my entire life because I'm terrified of men. Because I am, like, a very emotional, sensitive.
Me too.
Yeah, me too. All of us.
Yeah.
We should all be friends.
So interestingly enough, this past winter, I went through a drug and alcohol treatment program.
Right.
And was forced to spend 24 hours a day with, 20 dudes. Like, really rough dudes.
Mm.
Whom said some very problematic things, very racist, homophobic, transphobic, mm-hmm, just kind of xenophobic all across the board.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I felt, and I was not in a good pl- place when I was in this facility, I was really struggling with a lot of things. But the one place mm-hmm. that I, as soon as I started to get a bit of my confidence back and felt like I could sort of stand up a little bit to these guys, was talking about sort of like the ways in which they were talking about women. And I would sort mm-hmm. of often like ask them to like consider and reflect on like just like the lack of respect mm-hmm. they like. So they would just like, yeah, they're like a bunch of guys in a treatment center, you know, horny as all hell. And so whenever we go to like these like recovery meetings, they're constantly checking out the women there and like talking right. about their bodies and stuff like that. And I mean, I think the most that I, the what I did more than anything as opposed to like jumping down people's throats about it was that mm-hmm. if they, you know, if a guy started to assist me like, oh, do you like check out her tits? I would just be like, I'm just like not into talking about her like that. That's yeah. not my, like, I just don't, I don't partake and I don't like mm-hmm. laugh it off. I just kind of say like, no, sorry. And like some of the guys could tell pretty quickly that like, I was just not one of the, I was not a person in that place that was going to like jump on board and start objectifying every like attractive woman that we saw. And mm-hmm. I think by doing that, that was like a way that I could sort of use my privilege to not feed into it. Like mm-hmm. I wasn't necessarily like educating mm-hmm. them, but I was sort of like acting by example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's interesting. And also something I've been thinking about is ways in which we can all educate one another about issues that we feel passionately about. So like, it's kind of interesting to think about what is more effective. Like, if you are to not engage in a conversation that is sexist and sexualizing of women versus you, like you say, like, if you were to alternatively jump down their throat and be like, you know, don't talk about her like that, you're a pig, like, mm-hmm. you know, men shouldn't behave like this. It's like, which actually elicits a better response? Like, basically, like, the role of kind of, like, shaming people in, mm-hmm. like, whether it's sexism or it's, like, cultural appropriation or mm-hmm. racism or anything, it's, like, I sometimes see people getting really upset about issues, which they have every right to be upset about, but when yeah. you shame someone and kind of belittle them, even if you have just cause, I sometimes wonder whether that is effective.
Mm-hmm. I could speak to that.
Please do.
So there was a time when I was very active on the internet, mm-hmm. Facebook specifically, and a part of like a lot of, like, I was just like starting to really get into feminism.
Right.
You know, I was really just feeling like very, like activated and, mm-hmm. Spent a lot of time reading a lot of feminist articles and kind of learning about the state of our current society in regard to like, the gender inequality and stuff like that. And I really felt like I had a lot to say, and I was learning from these like other online communities where like if there was bigotry or there was sexism or there was racism, like they would really jump down people's throats about it. It was this very aggressive sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I adopted that. Like, I was like, yeah, this is how we respond to oppression in this particular right. online community. And I would like jump in there just as hard and just as fast and sort of like jump down these white dudes' mouths about like the shit that they were saying. Mm-hmm. But what I realized in retrospect was that like, for if there's a conversation going on and it's about like sexism mm-hmm. and we're sort of responding to like some sort of sexist remark that a guy is saying, and I'm jumping in there with like the same emotion as like mm-hmm. a woman would in that situation, it doesn't really like, I guess, make sense. Like, I have the capacity to not necessarily, like, I don't know what it's like to experience sexism, mm-hmm. right? So for me to get all fucking frustrated and have this like emotional release about it, it's not really my place. And I actually have the privilege to be able to keep myself calm and be like, okay, this doesn't actually affect me. Like, these words aren't killing me. They might be killing my sisters and my, and like the women in my life, but like I'm not being threatened here. Yeah. So I know that part of like me using my privilege for good is like to acknowledge like, okay, like there's a lot of like frustration I think a lot of people have when they're like, oh God, you know, these feminists like just jumping down their throats and stuff like that. It's like, well, for female feminists, like they've been having these conversations for so long and they've been experiencing this oppression for so long. Yeah. You're not like, can you not understand why there would be so much involved, like so much emotion and anger involved in it? Like, yeah, they're gonna be fucking angry.
Yeah.
But I, for one, have the sort of emotional, like spoons. Like, I can do the emotional labor by taking men aside and instead of calling them out, like calling them in and having a conversation mm-hmm. and being like, listen, man, like let's talk about this. Like, I'm not gonna jump down your throat. I understand that you are a product of your environment and like you probably mm-hmm. really don't think that you're being sexist or that you aren't a sexist, but mm-hmm. like, let's talk about this. So I feel like, I think that like people of oppressed and marginalized communities have every fucking right to get angry.
Yeah.
And like be angry and yell if whatever helps that person sort of like feel more empowered mm-hmm. in a situation in which they really hold no power or very little power. I like, it's like I'm all about it. But for me, like as like a white male socialized person, like mm-hmm. I don't feel like I have the same right to like jump in there with the same sort of emotional force, you know, and I can do a lot. And like you say, like I can do a lot more. I can help a lot more things by like not shaming an individual and coming at it from a place of like understanding, respect, compassion, because like I haven't always been, I was a sexist, homophobic piece of shit from Saskatchewan for a long time. I had to learn this stuff, right? Yeah. And it was only from the amazing like feminist women in my life that I ever ended up learning anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I have sort of a responsibility to like pass on that knowledge in like the loving way in which it was offered to me.
Yeah. Well, that's really great. I really respect and appreciate your ability to like take a step back and listen and try to call people in, not out, as you put it. I think that's really mm-hmm. great. Do you have any other questions for Levi, Amanda?
I don't believe so. I think that wraps it up for that section.
Okay, cool. Well, Levi, thank you so much for speaking with us. Really appreciate it. And this is going to be on the Women's Radio Collective Lady Radio Show, which is on Friday from 6 till 7 on CITR 101.9. If you want to tune in and hear your beautiful voice on the air and our beautiful voices. thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, and thanks so much for asking me to be a part of it. I really appreciate
it.
Yeah,
no worries.
Thanks, Levi. Cool.
Have a good day.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Cool. That was great. I'm going to turn the phone line off. Now we're good. I thought that was really interesting.
I liked how it like somehow like went from talking about vulnerability to like how it affects genders and then how genders are affected by each other mm-hmm. in our society. So mm-hmm. I thought that was very interesting where that went.
Yeah, and also how Levi has had such a drastic approach to masculinity or like internalization of masculinity to being so challenging of it now, like not to just like pat him on the back, but it is really interesting hearing about his relationship with his girlfriend and like, mm-hmm. you know, kind of feeling like he was entitled to sex and mm-hmm. like, and then now kind of like being able to stop and listen and like know when to not take up space and when to let women or people of color mm-hmm. or whoever doesn't have power have power in a moment. Yeah. And like, that's really cool. And that probably takes a lot of undoing of socialization.
Yes. Respect.
So
respect.
Yeah, cool. So I think, now we would like to talk a little bit about social media in the modern world.
Here we are.
Yeah. So we were talking a bit before about, social media and like smartphones and stuff. And,
Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook is social media, Instagram. Something that I think Amanda and I both have kind of on and off again relationships with for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about your relationship with Facebook?
And oh, yeah, totally.
First, and I'll get into mine.
I definitely have anxiety around social media, mostly because I find myself... when I'm dealing with depression or anxiety, I sometimes isolate from people, and my isolation goes to me just like scrolling my newsfeed on Facebook or just like texting people and not really having like a human connection face to face. So it's really hard because I tend to go out less when I'm going through like a extreme of an addiction to social media.
Yeah. So kind of ironically.
Yeah. Totally. And so for me, that definitely triggers a lot of vulnerability and can send me in this like weird vulnerability spiral or shame spiral, because then if I'm on the internet more, when I'm in person with people, I have a hard time being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And it causes a lot of anxiety having to talk about my feelings. Whereas when I'm not on social network or, you know, actually going out and, like, seeing people one-on-one or in a group, I find myself, like, far more comfortable around people. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm open all the time anyways. I'm able to talk about everything mm-hmm. all the time. But it just comes a lot easier when I'm not obsessed with the internet
yeah.
and obsessed with, like, texting people my feelings, but mm-hmm. rather talking about them in person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And I think that in a way it's similar to my experience, but different. Like, mm-hmm. this idea of there kind of being, like, two different, like, avenues of relationships and human connection now, like one being online or on your smartphone or whatever, and then one being like in person. So this kind of like, and what I feel is when you have connections and relationships with people that are online, that are through social media and like just through texting and stuff, it creates this kind of like buffer zone where there's both, like, the technological aspect of the fact that you're communicating through a medium, and therefore you don't, you're not with that person, so you don't know when they really have time to respond to you, and, like, you're basically just kind of in a relationship that's kind of being determined differently by different people. Like, one person might be really into communicating and getting a response right away, and the other person might be like the kind of person who checks their Facebook messages once every week or something. Mm-hmm. And so there's like this kind of weird zone of like you're on a different page, whereas there are social rituals and standards in place for like personal interactions. Like, mm-hmm. if I see you and I say, "Hey, Amanda," you have to say, "Hey," back. Like, if you're just like, you just like, you look at me and just, like, walk by because you're not in the mood to talk. Like, mm-hmm. you just couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, you could, but I'd be, like, rude.
Yeah, and for sure. And through text message, if you just say hello to someone
yeah.
through text, it's totally normal, not saying it's right, but for someone to just be like, "No, I'm not going to say hi back."
Totally. Yeah, exactly. And I find, so this is one of the reasons I have issues with, like, phone communication, not even to get into social media, but is, like, I'm a very sensitive person, and when people don't respond to me in a timely fashion, that generally doesn't bother me as much, but, like, when people don't respond to certain messages I put forward, like, if I propose some plan or something and someone doesn't reply, I'll be like, "Oh, well, I guess they don't want to hang out with me," or, like, I have trouble not making those external kind of probably just, like, failures of communication into, like, kind of personal attacks on me.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of like those situations, the position I find myself then in as a result is what to do about those feelings I have. So if I perceive myself as being hurt by someone through a text message or lack of response to something, then I'm in a position where I can either like deal with it or like have some sort of conflict resolution take place, or just be kind of passive aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a personal goal in my life to deal with conflicts and to be mm-hmm. honest and open about my feelings, because I believe from my experience those feelings do not just disappear. They mm-hmm. turn into resentment, or they will come up at another time.
Mm-hmm.
And so despite knowing that, I often find it easier to just be passive aggressive and like I just won't text them back, or like I don't know, like I'll just feel like jilted by them, and then like I just like won't include them in some plan I have or something, which sounds so petty, but I feel like I get really just like hurt by people, and it gets kind of exhausting feeling like you're the only one who wants to bring up hurt mm-hmm. feelings. Like and this gets back into vulnerability, like sometimes I feel like I'm the only one who's vulnerable and susceptible to the actions of others.
Yeah.
And so you start of like you find yourself in a place where it's like, "Oh, I'm the only one who's crazy. I'm the only one who wants to talk about these things." And so it's not even so much that I'm trying to be mean when I'm being passive or passive aggressive, but it's that it just seems, I don't know, exhausting or mm-hmm. I don't know, unusual or bizarre to actually just bring something up.
Yeah, totally. I definitely understand that. And I think it's, like, it is kind of vulnerable because, like, you want to bring it up. But also, mm-hmm. if we're talking about through cell phones, like, mm-hmm. Not getting a text back after bringing up an emotional subject is very mm-hmm. vulnerable, too. So, like, yeah. you're just, like, waiting mm-hmm. and unsure what to do. And, like, you're scared of the response. And so, like, for you, it sounds like it's kind of... through text messaging that, like, the vulnerability is, like, really hard for you. Whereas mm-hmm. for me, I'm easily able to be, like, texting
yeah.
and vulnerable through that. Because yeah. then I don't have to show them my face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, but, like, I, even though that's the case, like, I would much rather talk to someone in person.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to get away from texting my feelings. But
right.
yeah, but it has caused, like, some issues with me being vulnerable in person.
Yeah. Because then if you text someone, like, oh, I'm really mad about this, like, what I'm often afraid to or reluctant to do, then do you find that they do accuse you of overreacting and, like, kind of...
Well, I have had past situations with that, with dating,
mm-hmm.
Where, like, you know, the same old story, like, you're being crazy.
You're being crazy.
For just bringing up some emotions, even though yeah. I would say that I always brought them up in a very calm manner.
Yeah.
But it wasn't portrayed that way, I guess,
yeah.
to them. And so that's definitely an issue with, like, talking about feelings through mm-hmm. cell phones and or just on through texting.
Yeah.
But I think in that scenario, though, I'm going to segue just a little bit into something else.
Yeah,
that, like, with dating, especially in the beginning of relationships, especially when I used to be monogamous,
mm-hmm.
It was harder to be vulnerable in the beginning. So,
yeah.
like, vulnerability seen as, like, such a negative thing, to most people, it would be very difficult to, like, bring up emotions.
Yeah.
Even in the first month or two. Like, it would just
yeah.
be like, oh, don't do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that definitely plays into my text history of that. But now
yeah.
I find it, like... I always think about vulnerability, and, like, I always think of vulnerability and self-worth, and I always mm-hmm. think that those two go pretty hand in hand for me.
Right.
And so, I mean, for me, I've definitely noticed, like, just being unapologetically myself, like, very
yeah.
much helps the
totally
the situation.
I agree.
And helps me to stop shaming myself so much.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that like, kind of what you're saying too is that this idea of vulnerability, either, like, in the way you've experienced it or the way I have through texting and phone culture, basically transcends into real culture too.
Mm-hmm,
so, like, in
definitely.
Relationships and with dating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when it comes to social media, I find myself less vulnerable in terms of the way I communicate with people. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't really care if people, like, write on my wall or whatever. I don't have Facebook right now.
Mm.
But when I did, because I have such an on-again, off-again relationship with it, I always mm. delete it. But I find more that I am kind of made emotional to an extent about what other people are doing and what other people are posting. And it's, like, this kind of world of just comparison for me where it's like, oh, well, that's cool that so-and-so, like, made this movie or wrote this book or, like, cool, like my self-esteem is just reduced because of that person's mm-hmm. success, which is, I am fully aware, mm-hmm. Does not make sense. Like, someone else's success does not mean your failure.
Mm-hmm.
And those two actions or those two existences are not connected. And so it's kind of... a sort of irrational way of thinking that I'm aware of, but still, unfortunately, am susceptible to. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I find I need to sort of step out of social media, and by that I mean mm-hmm. delete Facebook and Instagram, and in order to kind of just center myself more and be present and just be around my friends. And, like, because the thing is, if you know stuff about people who you don't even talk to, like, that's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I know that, like, Sally, whatever, like... Mm-hmm. has this great job. It's like, I don't even talk to her. Like, it's like we just know so much about other people and we only see these curated best sides of them, right? So it's like, for, I don't know, like, I find it incredible when people aren't affected by social media. Like, I know some people aren't really. I've talked to people who don't really get jealous, don't have their self-esteem kind of attacked by the achievements of others. That's great. I think that's great. Unfortunately, I'm still working on not being so externally, I don't know, affected. So
I think that definitely depends on your upbringing as well, like how social media was in your life when you were younger, or just you know, what you deal with, like mental struggles.
Mental health,
I think that will really play into perhaps how certain things affect you. Like, for instance, myself, like having anxiety, and then also I've been using the internet and MSN chat and everything since I was 12 years old.
Right.
So, and I've been watching TV, like, you know, good, like, say, 5 hours a day up until I was, like, 17. So, I mean, my life is very much, like, in social media.
Right.
And just, like, media in general. So, I mean, definitely... that was my way of communicating for so long that, like, that's how I thought, like, I was supposed to be vulnerable. And now I'm starting to, like, try to backtrack and be like, okay, I need to, like, have more human connections. And try this out. But it's, like, a struggle for me because I'm just like, oh, okay. You know, and obviously with some other events thrown in there.
And it almost feels like at this point, if you're not on social media and participating almost aggressively in that world and, like, self-promoting kind of aggressively, that you don't exist, right? Like, if it didn't happen on social media, did it happen? Like, am I alive right now? Like,
I had someone thinking that I moved out of Vancouver for, like, 4 years because I didn't go to shows very often. And I wasn't posting anything on Facebook. And they're just like, oh, I thought you moved away. I'm like, what gave you that idea? And they're just like, oh, I didn't see you, like, posting anything. I didn't see you at shows, so I thought you probably moved back to Hamilton. And I was just like, nope.
Well, at least part of that was based on your physical.
It was definitely, like, physical, but they definitely mentioned the Facebook thing too, because, like, just all of a sudden I cut it off and I was just like, I'm not going to use this for a little while. And then they're like, interesting.
It is. And
I was also going to say, social media with dating. Well,
let's get
I think
back into that. That's always a popular topic.
And
an interesting one, I think.
Well, I think definitely for a lot of my male identified friends, a lot of them, and I'm surprised by the number of men that have opened up about this, that they feel especially creepy by the idea of, like, approaching a woman in real life. Even if it's not even in a sexual way. You know, like, sometimes they just, like, oh, cool shoes. That's all they want to say. Or they're waiting at a bus stop and they're just like, I just really, like, want some more human connections. And it happens to be a woman. But then they feel, like, creepy and they feel like they shouldn't be approaching people. And both Alex and I have talked about this and how we both have different ideas of what that looks like. Like, I have no problem with people approaching me. And I just kind of feel it out to see if they're being creeps or if they're going to, you know, if they're just, like, really just wanting to have, like, a happy-go-lucky conversation.
But see, like even, like, you saying, like the idea, the example of a man being at a bus stop and just, like, wanting to have more human connection and seeing a woman and, like, being like, oh, how's your day or something, it like, aggravates me because I cannot separate the idea of a man coming up to a woman in a public place when they have no reason to connect without, like, thinking of the power dynamic of their genders. Because it's, like, I've been in so many situations, which I was telling you about, where, a man has, like, come up and talked to me, like, on the bus or, like, in the line at a supermarket or whatever. And it's absolutely because I'm a young woman and they do not feel threatened. And there's, like, it's usually an older man who's I would assume, maybe a bit lonely, wants someone to talk to. There's a young girl. Like, he can just kind of, like, assert himself over her. And I find it oppressive. And, like, honestly, if a man ever just starts talking to me about something, I am just, like, not pleased, quite frankly. So it's, like, I don't know. It's a bummer because I agree. And also, maybe, I think linked with what I'm saying is inevitably the reality of, like, human isolation in our society being exacerbated by the internet and social media, right? Mm-hmm. So on top of this, there is also this idea of, like, if I'm going to get on the bus after work, I don't want to talk to, or, like, I just don't want to talk to anyone, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I'm getting on the bus, I don't really feel like having a conversation with Joe Schmo mm-hmm. about how my day was. I'm like, I have friends. Like, yeah. I don't need to talk to you. But then that's sad, too, because, you know, I do think there should be community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think, how I was saying, I just wish that, you know, I would really like for my guy friends to mm-hmm. feel more comfortable
yeah.
going up to people and talking to them. And perhaps they just need to talk to other guys for a little while.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they go up to a woman and start talking to her and, like, they have to feel out what she looks like, you know, like, what vibes mm-hmm. is she giving to
yeah,
them?
Yeah, like, is she responding positively?
Yeah, is she, like, looking away when he's talking? Is she yeah. giving really short answers? Is she, like, nervously laughing, like, a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like, to the point of being like, please leave me alone.
It's like red flag. Red
yeah.
flag.
Yeah. It's
it
just
out.
Like, okay, like, you know, start stepping away or, like, kind of like
yeah.
you know, stop the conversation.
These
just
are
walk
signs
away. Don't
to
ask
all
her
our
if
male
she's,
listeners.
Yeah. Do not ask her if she's uncomfortable because she probably is too uncomfortable to tell you she's
yeah.
uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just, like, knowing, and I think mm-hmm. that's, like, something that's missing, and it's really unfortunate to my guy friends that are, I find, to be not creepy
yeah.
And yeah. nice fellows.
Yeah, you have a few of those friends, that's good.
Yeah, but it's nice to not have non-creepy friends.
Yeah, totally.
But, yeah, for the, it just, I mean, it's just a hard subject, and mm-hmm. I think that's where I come back to, like, social media and, going into dating culture online. And I think that this is less vulnerable
yeah.
for people. And maybe guys, and I want to include, like, all genders in mm-hmm. on this because mm-hmm. I think it's a lot less, it's a lot less vulnerable for
yeah.
you to be on Tinder or OkCupid. And, you know, most likely, depending, I mean, someone might be there for friends, but
yeah.
you know, like, this person, like, if they match you,
yeah,
that they're interested in you in some way.
Yeah.
So you can, like, message them and approach them and
mm-hmm.
just, like, it feels less vulnerable to yourself to just be able to, like, know instead of, you know, like,
yeah.
if people could have, you know, like, white and red flags
yeah.
in person and just carry
yeah.
those around. And if someone's,
yeah.
like, walking up to them, they just pull up a red one if they don't want to talk to them.
Yeah.
Then maybe that would,
like,
be helpful.
That's like those parties, like, red, yellow, green parties or whatever.
Which is...
Except hopefully with less, like, sexual assault resulting. But, like, those parties where it's, like, you wear a red shirt if you're, like, in a relationship and a yellow shirt if you're, like, not sure. Or you're just dating around. And then a green shirt if you're, like, single and ready to mingle.
Oh.
Never heard of those parties. They
well,
are
that sounds like a treat.
Yeah. No sexual assault has ever resulted from such party.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the only reason I would want to go to that party is because I just want to wear, like, one solid color head to
for
head
the
to
fashion.
Toe. Yeah, just for the
monochrome fashion. Yeah. Oh,
I'd probably just wear a completely different color.
I'm wearing, like, a red dress, like a full, like, long red dress.
Yeah, I think I would just, like, I'd probably
small.
Just wear, like, baby blue or something. And
yeah.
just, like, switch it up and just
ooh.
Be like, they'd be like, what's that mean? I'd be like, I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, anyway. just wear all the colors. Just
yeah.
confuse people. But, yeah, I think that, I guess our, you know, to kind of sum up this segment on social media and smartphones and stuff and phone culture is, like, that through social media outlets like Tinder and, like, online dating sites and stuff, it can actually help to allow people to connect in safe spaces where they've all consented to being there to date or connect as friends or whatever,
mm-hmm.
While social media can also isolate us and disconnect us from the genuine feelings of our friends. And so it's kind of, I don't know, it's a bit of a gray subject, but I guess basically we're pro Tinder and anti Facebook.
Yeah.
It's like Amanda and Alex's judgments.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, some, yeah,
I think
we'll
that's fair.
Sum up this radio with, yeah, pro Tinder and Facebook.
Maybe
sucks.
That'll be the title when pro we podcast Tinder. This. Yeah. Yeah, so thanks for listening in, and tune in every Friday from 6 till 7 on CITR 101.9 FM to hear the Women's Radio Collective and more great stuff from great hosts like me and Amanda.
Yeah.
So thanks so much. We're going to maybe fade out with a bit of Supermoon because they're awesome, and we want to listen to them again. Thanks for listening, guys.